proud to have switched from liberal to conservative over the years.
The Talk of Northern Nevada. Speak out. 884-9910. FM News Talk.
99.1 and 92.3.
How are you doing, sir? We have a presidential candidate in our studio. I'm John Potter. You've seen him on Fox.
And you're not referring to Donald Trump, are you?
Well, I got people's hopes up.
Because Trump ain't here.
Trump's not here, right. But we have a presidential candidate in our studio. You've seen him on Fox. I've seen you on YouTube. Gosh, I saw you. You had a segment on 60 Minutes.
Right.
You folks from...
That was a long time ago, the 60 Minutes.
Well, thing. I'm old, yeah. Larry.
I was also on The Tonight Show with Jay Leno.
Oh, were you really?
Yeah.
No kidding. Mm-hmm. Larry Elder is in the studio.
I've got skills, John.
You got skills?
I've got skills.
Well, all right. You had your coffee today. This is going to be a match here. You folks from Southern California know Larry as the longtime host on Talk Radio KABC, and he was the front-runner replacement candidate in Governor Newsom's recall election 2 years ago. Oh, my gosh. Would that have been great if you won?
Yeah.
After running for governor of California then and securing millions of votes, Larry is now ready for the next step in his journey, and that is running for president of the United States. He is a candidate. As he says on his site, we've got a country to save. He is, I think, the nation's foremost black conservative, one of the leading conservative African-American voices today. They call him the sage from South Central. Mr. Larry Elder, what did I miss?
John, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it. I've never considered myself to be a leading black conservative. I consider the leading conservative in the country, black, white, whatever, to be Thomas Sowell. He's
well
an absolute
said.
Genius.
Well said, but my friend, a lot of folks don't know you, Larry.
Right.
We're Nevada, and this is radio. And I have to describe you. So black conservative, but overall, I think the foremost conservative, the more I read and hear about you. Now, what did I miss in that introduction?
Nothing. Okay. Thank you for not calling me the black face of white supremacy, which is what the LA Times called me during the gubernatorial race.
I was going to say, yeah. Now here's how the liberal media introduces you. And I took this, Larry, from NPR when they did a feature on you. Elder works for the right-wing broadcaster Salem Media Group, which boasts hosts who peddle discredited claims like about COVID, last year's elections, and more. He offers brashly conservative takes that are well-received among Trump supporters. And his takes on gender and race have provoked much outcry on the left. Oh, no.
Hide the women and children. Just on one of the things that you just now rattled off, I find it interesting that our side, meaning conservatives, people that supported Donald Trump when he ran and then ran again in 2020, are considered to be conspiracy theorists, election deniers. After the 2000 election, about a dozen Democrat House members made the same argument that Donald Trump made the first week of January 2001 to mm-hmm. challenge the certification of Florida. Mm-hmm. Fast forward 2004, John, after W gets reelected, 30 Democrat House members joined Senator Barbara Boxer from California to challenge the certification of Ohio, even though W won that by 118,000 votes, arguing that, wherever I heard this before, the Diebold voting machine had been tampered with. Fast forward 2016, Trump wins the election in an upset. Democrats challenged 9 states the first week of January after that election, 2017, January, and challenged more states than Donald Trump did when he challenged 6 after his defeat in 2020. Mm-hmm. Nobody called them election deniers, making the same legal argument that Donald Trump made. Nobody prosecuted them, and their lawyers were not facing disbarment.
What are these takes on gender and race that have the left in such a horrified state? And his takes on gender and race have provoked much outcry on the left.
Well, regarding race, I've always considered the Republican Party to be wimps when it comes to dealing with the assertion that the Democrats have made year after year after year that America remains systemically racist. For example, Donald Trump, John, recently was at Howard University, a historically black college, giving a commencement exercise speech. Mm-hmm. And he said the number one threat to the homeland is white supremacy. Now, the Anti-Defamation League keeps track of how many people are killed every year by extremists. And last year, 25 people were killed out of the over 20,000 homicide victims. If you want to play that game, most white people who are murdered by other white people. Most black people who are murdered by other black people. But there are several hundred every year interracial black-white homicides. Out of the total, maybe 3%, 750 interracial homicides between blacks and whites. 500 whites are killed by blacks. 250 blacks are killed by whites. So in other words, blacks kill twice as many whites as the other way around. If Donald Trump, at a commencement exercise, John, said, based on those numbers, the number one threat to the homeland is black supremacy, you and I would denounce him as being a race-hustling demagogue. But Biden says what he says at Howard University, and nobody says a word. Mm-hmm. Also, a few weeks ago, I'm sure you know this, a racist black a white man in Jacksonville, Florida, murdered three blacks and did it because they were black. And Joe Biden condemned it and said that silence in the face of hatred like that means you're complicit. 2 months earlier in Tulsa, Oklahoma, black guy gets a gun, walks up to a white guy, shoots him in the back of the head, execution style, kills him, goes to another part of Tulsa, Oklahoma, pulls out the gun, shoots another white guy in the back of the head, kills him execution style, and Biden did not say a word. Now, if silence in the face of hatred is complicit, you're being complicit, was Biden complicit when he didn't say a word about that? Yeah. And that's my point. It is rare for there to be any kind of interracial homicide, but to give people the impression happens frequently is what the Democrats do. Why? Because they want black people to be concerned about social justice and equity, whatever that means, and pull that lever to the degree of almost 90-95% for the Democratic Party. Without that monolithic black vote, mm-hmm. the Democrat Party would be in deep, deep voodoo at the presidential level because the country is split evenly. But when you can convince 13% to vote 90-95% one way, you've tipped the balance of power in favor of Democrats, which is why they do this.
You talk about Biden not saying anything about that instance. The news media didn't really say anything either.
No.
You kind of hit on systemic racism there. Which is a term I hear a lot in the news media, but when I hear it, I think, what is this? Are we back in the 1960s again? There is no real uplifting positive news about the changes that the good people in this country have made when it comes to race.
Absolutely.
The paintbrush is still negative. The way they talk, we are still back in the 50s.
John, I remember when Obama got elected. I'm old school. I had the New York Times, LA Times thrown to my house. So I bend over and pick them up. On the front pages of both newspapers are color pictures of black parents hugging their kids, crying, and saying, now I can say for the first time and be sincere that you can grow up and be anything you want to be. Now it's as if it never happened. And when Obama got elected, he walked into the Oval Office, John, with a 70% approval. Think about that. He got elected with a little more than 52% of the vote, but when he walked into the Oval Office the third week of January 2009, he was at 70%. Why? It wasn't because all of a sudden people wanted their capital gains taxes raised. It wasn't because all of a sudden people wanted Obamacare. It was because at the very least, even people who didn't vote for him thought he'll put a fork to the notion that America remains systemically racist. For 8 years, race card after race card after race card, from the Cambridge police acted stupidly to if I had a son, he looked like Trayvon, to embracing Black Lives Matter, to giving an interview saying that racism is in America's DNA, to having an AG, Eric Holder, who said that voter ID was pernicious racism, to having Al Sharpton in the White House over 70 times, so that when he left office, both blacks and whites thought race relations got worse. When he entered the office, both blacks and whites thought race relations would get better. He played race card after race card after race card. And I've called the black face of white supremacy because I recognize that America has, this is not your grandfather's America, for crying out loud. This is the only majority white country that's ever voted for a black president. Racism has never been less significant in American life, but it's never been more potent for Democrats to, as I said, convince a large number of black people that we are oppressed, that we are aggrieved, and we're owed things like reparations.
You know, I brought up this before that Dr. Martin Luther King did not see people as powerless, perpetual victims who were controlled by things outside their control. We are active in life. We're not passive, and we always have choices in how we act. I mean, there were quotes that Dr. King made about personal responsibility. I remember them, but the weird thing is when I go on Google to find them, I can't find them. Instead, I have quotes from Dr. King about, he says, one has a moral responsibility to disobey unjust laws. And I remember him saying pretty much the opposite, peaceful protest and personal responsibility and the power that each individual has.
Absolutely.
To change their lives and their outcome. So you and I are on the same page.
And John, you mentioned MLK. He gave an interview to British television in 1966. This is 2 years after the Civil Rights Act of 64. Mm-hmm. And he said, the changes in America, the positive changes in America have surprised me. Why, in about 40 years' time, we could have a black president. Do the math, almost on cue, 2008, Barack Obama gets elected. He didn't say in 40 years' time the president of Harvard will be a black female, and she is. He didn't say in 40 years' time we're going to have black CEOs of Fortune 500 companies. We've had several. He didn't say in 40 years the mayors of L.A., New York, and Chicago would all be black, and they are. He didn't say in 40 years the state of the Confederacy, Virginia, would have a black governor, and it did. He didn't say that there'll be two black coaches squaring off against each other in the Super Bowl, and there were. Mm-hmm. He said black president, meaning once that happens to the fullest degree that's practical, we've now gotten to the point where we are evaluating people based on content of character versus color of skin. And now we act as if it never even happened. It's just stunning to me.
And we're bringing up kids in school to think that we are this backward nation once again. Larry, what are you doing in town? What are you doing
here?
Well,
I'm giving a speech at the Wanamuka GOP annual gathering. And last night met with some Republican women here. The goal, John, is for me to make sure that I meet the criteria for the debate on the 27th of this month. I need to have 3% in three national polls to qualify, or 3% in two national polls and 3% in polls from one of the two early primary or caucus states, Iowa, New Hampshire, South Carolina, or here in Nevada.
You should have been on that first debate. The second debate is Wednesday. Are you saying that there's still a chance, Larry, to be on this? And these rules that they have to make it on the debate. Okay, well, we'll get into that. We're going to take a spot break. We're going to take calls for you.
Okay.
Is that okay? 884-9910. How well do you know us in Nevada? Northern Nevada, I mean. What is your take on our state, Larry?
Well, I know about Reno. I know about Las Vegas. Been here many, many times. I love the state. It's a nice, comfortable, happy state. I love the slogan of Reno, the biggest little town in America. Been here a few times. Also been to the shooting place, the front site. Is that what it's called? It's where they train you how to shoot firearms.
Good. Yeah. We have a couple of places to go shoot.
Yeah. I think it's called Front Sight.
We'll take a break right now. Larry Elder is running for president. When we come back, we'll talk about how you have the power to get Larry on these Republican debates. Next one is coming up on Wednesday, 884-9910. I'm John Potter, 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk, FM News Talk Time 990.
FM Talk on 92.3 FM in Smith and Mason Valley. 99.1 FM Talk for Reno, Tahoe, and all of Northern Nevada.
Larry, tote and tie for me today. I did this for you because Larry Elder, folks, presidential candidate in the studio. I'm John Potter. Watching you on YouTube's, and my gosh, by the way, the BET morning show interview was your best one.
Thank you.
That was your best one with Charlemagne the God.
Yeah, he's the guy to whom Joe Biden said, you ain't really black unless you know whether
exactly.
You want to vote for me or vote for Trump.
Oh, you tore it up on that show. Anyway, what impresses me about you is you're so well, one of the many things, you're so well dressed, even when you're on the radio. I saw YouTube's of you with a coat and tie and you were on the radio. So for the first time, I wore a coat and tie for you.
Well, when I walked in, I asked John, does he always wear a tie? And he said, well, actually, I wear a horn for you, and I don't have one on.
Well, you have a suit. You have a dress shirt on. This brings me back to my dad, who was a stickler for things like that. How you dress. And kind of thank goodness he's not here to see the way that a lot of people like to dress like they're homeless. But anyway, we're getting off track. What was your dad like?
Well, my father never knew his biological father, John. My last name, Elder, was not the name of his biological father. He never met him. Elder was an abusive man who was in his life the longest of a series of irresponsible boyfriends that his mom had. Elder was an alcoholic who physically abused his mother. When my dad tried to stop it, he would physically abuse my dad.
You talk so fast. When you say Elder, you're talking about your...
This man who was in my dad's life the longest. I'm not sure my dad ever even got adopted by Elder, but my dad began using his last name.
Okay, so your dad's parent.
Okay. Exactly. My dad never met his biological father.
Okay.
His mother was illiterate, irresponsible, had a series of boyfriends, each one more irresponsible than the other one. One boyfriend was a man named Elder. He was in my dad's life the longest, maybe 3-4 years. My dad began using his last name, but I don't think Elder ever formally adopted my dad. So my dad doesn't know what his last name really is. So fast forward, my dad's now 13 years old. He comes home, starts quarreling with his mom's then boyfriend. Elder John was long gone. Mom sides with the boyfriend and throws my father out of the house. Never to return. 13-year-old black boy, Athens, Georgia, at the beginning of the Great Depression, Jim Crow South. My dad walked down the road, picked up trash, cleaned out barns, did anything he could to make a living, became a Pullman porter for the trains. They were the largest private employer of blacks in those days. And this little black boy from Athens, Georgia, came to a state called California, a city called Los Angeles, and my dad was blown away. You could walk in the front door of a restaurant, sit down, and get served. So my dad made a mental note that maybe someday I relocate to California. Pearl Harbor, my dad joined the Marines. He was a staff sergeant stationed on the island of Guam in charge of cooking for the colored soldiers. He gets out. He goes back to Chattanooga, Tennessee, where he met and married my mom, to get him a job as a cook. And he was told, we don't hire N-words. My dad goes to an unemployment office. The lady says, you went to the wrong door. My dad sees colored only, goes to that door, to the very same lady who sent him out. My dad said, came home to my mom and said, this is nonsense. I'm going to L.A., where I was before the war. I'm going to get me a job as a cook, and I'll send for you. So he goes down to L.A., walks around John, and he's told, you don't have any references. We can't hire you. My dad said, I need references to make ham and eggs. Goes to an unemployment office, this time just one door. Lady says, I have nothing. My dad sat in the chair a whole day, came back the next day. She calls him up. She says, I have something. I don't know whether you're going to want it. My dad said, of course I'm going to want it. I'm starting a family. What is it? It's a job cleaning toilets and Nabisco brand bread. My dad did that for over 10 years, took a second full-time job.
10 years? 10 years. One job?
Took a second full-time job at another bread company, also cleaning toilets, worked two full-time jobs, cooked for a family on the weekend to make additional money because he wanted my mom to be a stay-at-home mom, went to night school to get his GED. After getting his GED, went to night school to learn how to operate a small restaurant. That's why the man was so grouchy all the time. He never slept. 5 minutes here, 10 minutes here, 15 minutes here. Not day after day or week after week or month after month, but year after year. 47 years old, my dad finally saved up enough nickels and dimes to start a little cafe near downtown L.A., which he ran until his mid-80s. When my dad retired, he owned the cafe, the property next door, plus the little house that's still in our family. Not too shabby for an eighth-grade dropout. And my dad was a lifelong Republican. My mom was a lifelong Democrat. You should have been a fly on the wall. But nobody called anybody a fascist or a Nazi or said you only care about the rich, you don't care about the poor. They argued passionately but civilly.
But Larry,
I don't know why we can't do that.
Larry, why aren't you angry about how your father was treated 20 years cleaning toilets? Why aren't you?
Because my father and my mother always told us the country is very different than it was when we grew up. My father would always say this, the door now is wide open. My father always told my brothers and me the following, John. Hard work wins. You get out of life what you put into it. Larry, you cannot control the outcome, but you are 100% in control of the effort. And before you moan or groan about what someone did to you or said to you, go to the nearest mirror, look at it, and ask yourself, what could I have done to change the outcome? And finally, my dad said this, no matter how hard you work, how good you are, sooner or later, bad things are going to happen to you. How you deal with those bad things will tell your mother and me if we raised a man. My parents wanted us not to be victims. My mother would tell us, nobody can make you feel inferior without your permission. The idea is to work hard, invest in yourself, and in America, you'll be just fine. That's what they've always told us.
How can people listening get you on the next Republican debate?
They can go to my website, LarryElder.com, throw something in the tip jar, because the last few days, John, we've embarked on a massive media buy to get my numbers up to the 3% necessary to qualify for the next debate. I've also written a book about what will happen to a theater near you if you adopt the policies that we've adopted in California. It's called As Goes California, My Mission to Rescue the Golden State and Save the Nation, about the one-party Democrat rule in California for the last several decades, and that's produced an exodus of people leaving the state.
Right.
Schools near the bottom.
Oh, they're coming here, too.
A huge crime problem, a huge homeless problem.
Coming here.
Yeah.
This is a refreshing thing on your 2024 presidential campaign website, where candidates present their issues, and they'll usually put homelessness or race or college debt on their list. You put crime as your top issue, first one on your list. And I say refreshing because we've had local candidates in our last election not even list crime.
Right. It's crime, John, and what I call the epidemic of fatherlessness, and they are related. 70% of black kids today enter the world without a father in the home married to the mother, up from 25% back in 1965. Now 25% of white kids enter the world without a father in the home married to the mother. And the stats are clear. If you're raised without a dad, you're 5 times more likely to be poor and commit crime, 9 times more likely to drop out of school, and 20 times more likely to end up in jail. What's happened? In the mid-60s, Lyndon Johnson, a Democrat, launched what he called the War on Poverty. And since then, we've incentivized women to marry the government and incentivized men to abandon the financial and moral responsibility.
Incentivized the women to marry the government. Mm-hmm. You're talking about the welfare system.
That's right.
Okay.
And this is not to denigrate the hard job that single moms have done, often with the help of extended family members, but it's much more difficult. Now, I told this to Charlemagne the God, and he pushed back. And I said, all right, riddle me this. A young black man, age 10 to 43, according to the Centers for Disease Control, is 13 times more likely to be murdered than a young white man, same demo. The number one cause of preventable death for a 19-year-old white male is accidents, like car accidents or drownings or overdoses. The number one cause of preventable death for a 19-year-old male and under is homicide, almost always at the hands of another young black male. Blacks account for 60% of the homicides, the shootings, and the robberies in America. Unless you're prepared, I told Charlemagne the God, to say that black people are just genetically inclined to commit more crime, hardwired to commit more crime, if it isn't fatherlessness, please tell me what it is. He had nothing. Obviously, that's what it is.
You are the model for young men on how to present yourself in public, civil, zero drama, grounded, articulate, prepared, logical, factual, and on the correct side of the debate. What an intelligent messenger you are.
You left out sex symbol.
Sex symbol. Okay, let me write that in.
Yes.
Masculine man. Check out Larry and his campaign for president on LarryElder.com. My friend, you are a man with a backbone, something my dad would say. Thank you for coming to this little radio station, John, in Carson City in Reno.
John, it's been my pleasure. God
okay,
bless.
Sir.
God bless.
You're running off to Winnemucca. Thank you, Larry Elder,
thank you,
folks. I'm John Potter. We'll be back on 99.1 FM and 92.3 FM Talk. Fox News is next. FM News Talk time, 9:31.
This is where Nevada comes to hear and talk about the news.
It scares me. It really scares me.
99.1 FM Talk.
And 92.3 News Talk Truth.
Hello. John Potter here. Many thanks to Larry Elder, presidential candidate, for coming by our studio here. I can take my tie off now. great guy.
I noticed the jacket already came off, so yeah.
And I even took my shoes off. But oh, you know what?
Okay, yeah. Fumigate the room next.
Would you stop watching me on these webcams? I just feel very self-conscious. It's a very odd thing.
Oh, you're fine.
One thing I was really impressed, I was doing a little research on Larry Elder. So, of course, I go to his campaign website, and I said to him, I said, it really impresses me, and it's really quite unusual that a candidate for any office, when they list their issues, puts crime at number one. And we had somebody running in my district in Reno, running, a Democrat. Unfortunately, he won. But on his website, this guy did not mention crime once. And folks, neighborhood burglaries are up. Shoplifting is an epidemic. Target closed 4 stores in April. And they said they expect to lose $600 million by the end of the year due to theft. $600 million. Walmart has had to shut down 23 stores this year. The CEO publicly said shoplifting was a major problem for the company, and we have these big retailers telling their stores to avoid confronting people who are stealing to prevent violence. You know, they might be violent, and we're letting this go on, and candidates don't mention this. Larry has it, number one issue. And the second issue he has on his website, LarryElder.com, school choice, which seems like a pretty high up in priorities for him. I'm sorry we didn't have the time to get into that. Another problem we have in this country, and this was in the news big time this week, illegal migrant crossings just hit some record highs. U.S. border authorities encountered more than 142,000 migrants at the U.S.-Mexico border in just the first two weeks of this month alone, matching or even surpassing previous monthly highs. What a number, 142,000 illegal border crossings in the first half of September. And have you heard this? And this was verified this week. More illegal aliens have come across our southern border this year than Allied troops landed in Normandy in 1944 to liberate Europe. Again, just this year. And of course, that amount of troops, you know, ended up overtaking countries. I'm getting dramatic here. But, you know, listening to the liberal media, they push the point that illegal crossings are not the crisis. It's rather the expense and the housing for the migrants. That's the crisis to them. They don't seem to know the concept in terms of cause and effect. And as long as we're getting so deep into issues here and serious this hour, I'll get this out of the way, too. And this is a local story. A horrifying story that happened in Nevada this week that I did not see this in the network news. I didn't see it on the big three news networks. The story of the gentleman who retired from being a police officer and moved to southern Nevada, Las Vegas, to be near his son and grandchildren. He was 64 years old. He retired early and was riding his bike where he was supposed to on the side of the road. And three young men in a stolen car, non-white, saw him riding his bike and thought it would be fun to hit him at high speed. And it certainly didn't make network news, but it was big on social media. So that's why I think you probably heard about this and also on talk radio. And to be honest, they killed him because he was a white guy and because they could. And they were talking about it on camera. And there's documented evidence of their intention. And the question that people have been asking, what I'm asking, is if you had reversed the races on this, how would it have played in America? If you had three white guys who had been recorded saying, let's hit that person on the bicycle because they're black, how would that have played in the media and in American society? And of course, it would have been played dramatically differently. You would have seen it replayed on the news over and over. Like, remember the story with the guy with the boat, and he wouldn't move the boat, and the black security guard was trying to get the guy to move the boat, and there were fisticuffs in this, and they ran that for days. Well, this would have been on the national news several times if we had a reverse of the races in this situation that happened in Nevada. And as it was, this situation with the victim white and the perpetrator's black, racism, the motive that has been ignored by the national news. And the thing is that whatever color you might be and whether you care about stuff like this or not, that's dishonest. When there are two sets of rules in a society of equals, something ain't right. And there is currently a dishonesty that permeates our society and our media. The fact that there are a great many race-driven crimes of violence perpetrated by African-Americans against white people, against Latino people, and over the last 3 years, almost exclusively, this sad trend of violence against Asian people have been committed almost exclusively by African Americans, and that truth cannot be brought up in public. It doesn't fit the news and general accepted narrative in our society. And the news is not better, and we are not better people by looking the other way. We are not engaging in higher dialogue by telling only part of the truth. Now, you know, nobody is saying this kind of people are good and this kind of people are bad, but if you create a situation where crimes or actions or trends involving a certain group of people can be spoken about, but crimes or actions or trends involving a different group of people cannot be spoken about, you're all of a sudden living in that George Orwell book, 1984, right? You're not being told the truth. You're being given a narrative. And at some point soon, I think there needs to be honesty about the sad level of criminal conduct in Black America that needs to be discussed. We've just barely begun to recognize that in terms of victims, we have, we need to have the courage to take the next step and honestly address the dramatic disproportionality of perpetrators of violence, and focusing on that fact and trying to figure out why, and trying to come up with something different from a who knows what cultural standpoint, from a social expectation standpoint, from a criminal justice standpoint, something that will address this. Because here's the thing, our silence is facilitating and creating more bigoted action and more criminal conduct. When you say, oh, well, you can't say that, then what happens is you're just encouraging and fostering things that are bad for society. And again, where this honesty begins, who will step out and do it, and how it can be honestly taken up without becoming some seedbed for racism, that's a challenge. But it's a challenge we have to take up, because right now, our current practice of absolutely ignoring has led to record violence, especially in urban America. And it has led to increased rates of racially driven crime, with the most prominent example of late being Asian people and Jewish people, again, in circumstances where a disproportion of the perpetrators are of one race whose name must not be spoken. Just being honest, and the news and we should be honest more often. Our time is 9:46. Trust me, we're going to have fun today. Larry got me started. So go to LarryElder.com. And once again, Larry, if you're listening on your way to Winnemucca, good show. I'm John Potter. Our phone number is 884-9910. We talk about anything. Open topic. Right now, Craig will take your calls and put you on hold, and we'll take calls in the order we receive. 884-9910. I'm 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. FM News Talk time is 9:47.
99.1 FM Talk.
And 92.3 FM.
This is Talk Radio. The original social media.
Hi, folks. John Potter here. Happy fall, y'all. Don't worry, we have a second summer coming, and then a second fall. Truckee Meadows, you know. I think, folks, by the way, I think this would be an excellent time for me to pass on to you my greatest discovery this week that I achieved through months of experimenting with my crock pot. We just bought an air fryer at Costco, and my wife, she is getting schooled on that. I'm way behind. I'm just getting into the crock pot age. Slow learner when it comes to cooking, says the man who once tried to cook a frozen pizza on a hot plate because that's all I could afford when I was going to college. But I digress. So here's the thing. If you love, I mean love, mac and cheese as much as I do, get your pen and paper ready. This was an amazing discovery to me, and it's brought a lot of joy to my household. I'm going to have that in a moment, giving you time to get the pen and paper. All right. No, really, I'm serious. It's so awesome. Let's go to the phones, 884-9910. John Potter here, and we're just speaking with John in Reno. Hey, John, welcome to the show.
Hi, John. If you want to be a wizard in the kitchen, get a 12-quart Instapot. Those are bad actors.
Okay, I'm sorry. Is Instapot different from air fryer? I thought that was the same thing. Okay, I thought
you
got...
You can deep fry in them, saute in them, but it's a pressure cooker if you like brisket and fork tender meats. Hey, how's your war with the ants?
A great help happened because of the weather. I'm starting to see fewer ants. Now, I got a new problem because our fruit trees did so well and we're storing the fruit in, oh my gosh, drawers and cabinets and everything. The fruit flies have now invaded inside the house. That's a totally different thing. I'm freezing pears and apples and making a mess out of things. I've been making pear juice with a blender. So the ants have pretty much left town, but they'll be back next year, no matter what you do.
I've got them in my kitchen sink in the morning. Where are they coming from?
I don't know. I'm clueless about those creatures.
Anyway, I had a very, very bad experience yesterday. Two of them with these, all of a sudden, I don't know why, call centers. It appears you can't call any organization and get through to someone on the phone.
No.
I had a complaint about my terrible newspaper delivery service. I was missed 2 days in a row. And then another.
Did you end up talking to the Philippines with that phone call, John?
I don't know. It was somebody in Krapistan who spoke English so poorly. And he called himself Timothy. And then I had to organize getting a phone returned for repair or replacement. And I called their call center, and a transaction that should have taken about 10 minutes took an hour because I kept having to repeat back to the girl, "What? What'd you say? What?
You are detailing my life, and your name is John. I'm talking to my double here. John, as we know, customer service is gone right now, and whatever you do, don't get second step authorization on anything. And don't get a subscription, because there's nobody to cancel that subscription for you. Oh my gosh, I got this wine club that got me every year $360 for 6 bottles of wine because I went to Healdsburg and thought it would be a good idea, and cancel it. Anyway,
we don't demand excellence anymore.
I'm afraid.
I said this a couple of weeks ago. We are back reliving the 1970s where everything is crap. And everywhere I go, everything is run by an idiot. Well, right. John, do it to them before they do it to you.
All right,
goodbye.
John.
Goodbye.
Thank you, sir. All right, we got time to give the amazing mac and cheese discovery. Okay, folks, this amazing discovery by far topples the beloved Kraft version, in my opinion, and so much simpler. And it's nothing more than turning on your crock pot. So here we go. Deliciously simple. Just get 2 boxes or a bag of dry elbow macaroni. Get some whole milk, some evaporated milk, a bunch of grated cheese. I use cheddar or mozzarella, and just a little bit of melted butter. You don't have to do anything